Okay. And Joan tricked me. Again, these are all the people I'm glad they're doing this tonight. David Diaz, let's come.
I wasn't really planning on doing this tonight. I had something just in case, but I walked in and Joan had already put my name down on the list. Just one sort of qualification about this poem. It was originally written, the first version of it was written in response to a poetry competition which used a quote from a poem by Kenneth Slessor and invited poets to write a response. And I incorporated the Slessor quote within the poem, and it sort of didn't get anywhere in the competition, so I forgot about the poem for 10 years, rewrote it, and I've kept the quote in there. So there is a quote from Kenneth Slessor in there. The world at his fingertips. Half a lifetime the librarian spent sequestered in whispers, the studious quiet of a temple, hands opening books, fingers turning pages in a slow rustle, footsteps light on the carpet, and even the air conditioning, a low do not disturb background hum. Everything was muffled, daylight muted through small high windows, the bustling crowds beyond the walls a distant susurrus. At first, he held this quiet close, let it still his thoughts, let himself be filled with minutiae, the way dust motes drifted through the air, the way mornings slid into afternoons, the clean order of things, the careful scraping of a pushed back chair, until he found himself in a reverie of satisfaction, rosy in the perfect alignment of internal and external filters, safe. Later, he watched those moments slip away, and later still remembered them, as if perhaps the remembering would bring them back, and once more still his discontent, his restlessness, the tick-ticking of the years so noisy in this place. Then the hours dragged, and he, to fill them with something other than regret, to feed a strange compulsion, hunted obscurities in neglected corners, in locked cabinets, irony tugging the diffident line of his mouth. He retreated to collections of old maps, lined renderings shaping the unknown, fragile in his hands. Over the flat and painted atlas leaves, his reading glass would tremble as something dormant and unmet began to stir, as the straitjacket of his life slipped off. Imagination set loose, he followed the curve of foreign coasts, swept inland, over mountains, jungles, floodplains, entered the exotic, street beggars, teeming bazaars, a muezzin's call to prayer, the curious eyes of children, saw the unfolding of a thousand paths, of choices spreading outwards and outwards, touched lightly the man he would never be. Thank you.
Michelle Mayer.
Like I'm going to be speared by it, but okay. Maybe you could back it up just a little bit. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's just an amazing reading tonight. So many of the poems dealt with memory and death of loved ones, and. This is a poem that I wrote after the death of my mother. And it was released, I guess, because of the presence of our middle daughter, who's with me here tonight, Julia. Death gives us. Death gives us what nothing else can. A woman as solid as a boulder squatting in the middle of the road, a triangular monolith. Yes, her we can rest on. She is strong enough to carry us when nothing else can. She gathers us. Can she take our love? I think so. That darkness takes what we carry. She comes down on the side of us that lives in the world we suffer in, but asks for more. Our rock, our womb, our strength. When we fail, she will carry us, her hair long, covering her face, her hands full of stars. As I get older, memories will kind of blur. And sometimes I get confused about what I have lived and what other people have lived, but they've told me about, and I've adopted them as my memories. What I never lived. I remember my father's cousins killed in a fire when he was a child, two girls, who ran through my dreams in a white sheet of fire, rounding the corner of my grandparents' house, coming into the backyard where I was playing with my brother. I look up and see their limbs emerge from long spears of flame hurtling towards us. Thank you.
Yes, Stu Shepherd, where you at?
Thank you very much. I do not have any books to sell tonight like everyone else did, but I am available at a reasonable price to do live readings, bar mitzvahs, birthdays, and brisses, anything with a B I will do. So I don't ever dedicate poems to people, but I do dedicate them to animals, and I want to read this as it's appropriate, in memory of a little buddy of mine who passed away this weekend. And this is called While These Great Creatures Sleep. Sometimes when the cliffs of the universe are closing upon you, the only creature that can slip through the cracks is a cat. Not many remember this, but if you talk to the old priests still chained to the basement of the Vatican, they will tell you that many years ago, God changed the angels into cats to slip by the demons and save mankind. God loved to stroke the wings of these creatures, and they would mule, begging God for the chance to catch one more thing by the tail and hear it squeal. They were the bravest of souls, never complained, even when dogs were invented and tried to steal their show. Now, most of them lie complacently all day like the savvy warriors of Alexander, waiting for the moment they will be called back into action when the earth is out of tilt, the heavens are cascading downward, and the Persians are swarming towards Gaugamela. But for now, they are content to sleep, and in their sleep, dream extravagantly of the next great battle of the universe. Thank you. That's for BC.
Next poet, where's Ziggy Marley. Come on, Ziggy Edwards.
Okay, I'm very gratified to see there are some people in the room who have not heard this poem before, probably. So I'm going to read this poem from my book, which I'm not trying to sell it. But actually, while I'm here, I do want to plug something. I have been so impressed by all the readers tonight. I would just love for any and all of you to submit to my little online venture. It's called Upagus, UPPAGUS, like Snuffleupagus. my son Jude and I started it about a year ago. We've had 6 issues come out, and it just gets more and more fun. And it really only keeps going because of poets and flash fiction writers, too, and visual artists sending in submissions. So that's my plug. And I will read a poem from my little chapbook called The Devil You Know. When Mrs. Galooly is tired of the limited vocabulary of preschool children, she drives to the public pool where Satan is usually cooling off in the deep end. He treats her to nachos and hot dogs. He won't get cramps if he goes back in. She finds his ruminations on the president, the global economy, consumerism, quite uplifting. He rubs her pearl earring under his rough, sunburned thumb, steals her a lawn chair, then spreads a warm black towel between its arms to save her back and thighs from welts. They laugh together when the handsome, evenly tanned lifeguard slips on one of the wet wooden rungs on the way up to his throne, and he swears at his scraped hand. Yet she's never invited the devil to her third-floor apartment across from the park. She finds that unwise, since he's Satan, which he's admitted from the very beginning. Thanks.
All right, is anybody we missed? Because sometimes I make a mistake. All right. Anything you can't give somebody, you give them teaching, but you can't give them wisdom. And I was teaching all day, boxing kid. I actually was teaching craziness, but the influences. Lenny Bruce was an influence on me, and I like Lenny Bruce. I like this, how he dared to do that. And Lenny Bruce, I was explaining it to some of these people who are teaching it. I said, Lenny Bruce is, he did this. He said everybody should drive their own car, have their own car keys, pick their own path. And this young lady sat there and looked at me and says, "Who's Lenny Bruce?" I said, well, he was the forerunner, and he taught with George Carlin. And she says, who was George Carlin? I went, wow, okay. But anyway, this is Lenny Bruce right here, if you don't know who he is. They made a movie called Lenny. Go look at it. One of my influences. I'm going to read a kind of filthy guttural poem. Now I'm going to read one. All right. This is called Twanger with a Deaf Ear. I got a slight twang in the old twanger. Did you say what I think you said? She said, I said, come on, help me make the bed. The twang left me and I lumbered over to my side of the bed. Oh, I thought you said something else. She said as she fluffed the pillows, your mind is always in a gutter. No, I haven't talked to my brother. She said, you really loud. You better get your hearing aid. I said, you don't have to yell. She said, get the wax out of your ears. It's going to start affecting the way you talk. I asked, do I talk funny? She mimicked, do I talk funny? I don't talk like that. Okay, you don't talk funny. Stop that, she smiled. Top that. I finished making the bed, sat on the edge, and grunted, and as I pulled on my socks, you know, I make the same grunting noise that my father made when I thought him to be an old man. She rubbed my thinning hair head. You're not old. You're like fine wine with clogged ears. I said, thank you. She said, anytime, Deefy, anytime. Okay. This poem, I just like to sometimes, I like sounds. And the influences on this was Coleridge, Michelangelo, the touching, where you never quite touch God. and T.S. Eliot. So all that mad, and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. Oh, and Macbeth, Toil and Trouble. Okay, that's done with your head. And, okay, it's called Building a Sunny Dome in a Dream Called Guantanamo. I dreamed to a fault and awoke David years ago to the chisel of Michelangelo, dreaming of Guantanamo and war and warts, and dreamed of a great university to teach world peace and harmony for men, men just like you and me. Thought men of peace and Jesus, I was lost for a name. Thought maybe Teresa or Gandhi or Kublai Khan, but it was just hard to put my finger on a name for peace. Dreaming in seesaw or waterboards or monkey cages and all the great words of all the great sages, but that was ages and ages ago, and I just rather dream of Pinocchio and places I know before that only prophesized war. Much easier to dream only of Raven and the Lore. And that was long ago and ages before, a world to smithereens or galore. Easier to think of Caesar or Alexander, Patton or Stonewall, and roses of war, and men with great noses and greatest generations. Much easier to think of Moses and Cyrano of lover's verse, or men tossed from Eden carrying a wisdom curse. And I dream the fires of alchemy and tell how can I change you or me? Maybe, just maybe, build a tower called Utopia, a sunny dome over ashes of Hiroshima. But who's to say we will travel this way once again and dream the Thor thoughts, realizing we are only men? Thank you. See you next week.